This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Renegade Report. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm here, I believe.
You're present.
Yeah, good to see Jonathan.
We're looking at the camera now.
Right.
Hi, camera.
We had a massive argument before this.
Was it really a massive argument?
Perfection versus just putting stuff out there.
Indeed.
And I think people lose a lot of focus when they seek perfection.
Is that what you think?
Rather than just doing the work, even crappy at the beginning.
All right. Well, I suppose. Perhaps I come from a field where we do the work properly to start off with.
After how many years of study, Jonathan?
Many, many, many.
There we go. And what is that called?
So,
evolution.
So you have us on one camera if you're watching on YouTube. We're starting to put stuff onto YouTube. Some of you have requested that. For some reason, you want to listen to the auditory side of things and watch us talk, which is kind of weird. But anyway, all right.
Your wish is our command, as they say.
Yeah, today we don't have anyone in studio, so I've been dying of the plague. Ramon seems very healthy and well.
Could I do CrossFit?
Yeah, that's the reason. And you're not a vegan?
No.
Not even close.
No, not even close. I think veganism kills more bacteria and insects than like normal farming does, if I'm not mistaken. I read that the other day. It must be true.
Well, there's those little bugs that live on lettuce that you can't get rid of.
You see, and I hate lettuce. And call me an
well, they live on a lot of vegetables.
I don't eat vegetables. So there you go. I'm an eco warrior. Checkmate, vegans.
Saving the earth one cow at a time.
And reducing climate change, you know, by killing cows. Because that's also a big thing. And we've got 12 and a half years to save the world before the rest is shit again.
Yes, 12 and a half years. So actually, you should mark this podcast because in 12 and a half years' time, what they'll do is they'll say there's another 12 and a half years until the world ends because they were wrong again with their modeling.
Because here's the thing. I mean, I think climate change exists. I think it has been going on for millions of years.
Of course.
I think humans are partially responsible for the latest batch. But all their predictions have just been like catastrophically wrong.
Hmm.
There's no more ice shelf in the Arctic or Antarctic, whatever.
This is what happens when you mix politics into science.
But now there's more than ever. There's more polar bears. There's more rainforest. There's less hurricanes. There's everything objectively.
I think
is wrong.
I think they, you know, recently one of the climate scientists who's part of the International Panel on Climate Change, which is the UN body, he's one of the lead sort of guys. He made it quite clear what they're really angling for. He's a identified socialist. He believes in socialism, communism, the principles of Marx. And he turned around and said, if we really want to stop climate change, what we really need to do is stop capitalism. And I think now at least we're getting down to some brass tacks honesty.
Are they finally being honest, Jonathan?
Yeah, I think that's – I think there is science, obviously. But then what people do is they co-opt their politics on top of the science and then they interpret whichever way it suits them.
Yeah, but ironically, capitalism is the best way to solve this because richer people care about the environment more.
Well, the reason the rainforests, for example, have started growing again, that we've got actually so we don't have reforestation, but we also don't have deforestation. We've got euforestation, as far as I understand, if I'm correct on the terminology, which is we neither kill off more trees or grow more trees. We're kind of at a complete zero-sum game, essentially,
right,
on trees. And that's very different to where we were in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s, where we were deforesting most of the world. And the reason that's happened is actually largely because of capitalism and largely because, well, there's capitalism on the one side and there is activism to do with that as well, mm-hmm, making people more aware. But as you say, as people become more wealthy, as people become able to deal with things that aren't basics, like feeding yourself, clothing yourself.
Of course.
They're able to worry about, oh, crap, you know, this hamburger I'm eating might have caused a tree to be knocked down somewhere 3,000 miles away.
No, but even in terms of what you buy, you're happy to buy like the melanin furniture instead of having to sit on a whatever, a plastic box at home. Like, you're able to buy stuff that was made that wasn't eco, whatever, damaging or whatever the case might be. But yes, once you relatively rich enough to own your property and things like that, you generally tend to look after it and are far less wasteful. Yeah. Capitalism is the answer, not the... the USSR, they killed 20, 30 million people, but geez, they were really green while doing it. Because they killed them with what? Bamboo sticks? No, they used bullets and they used industry and they went to the moon. They built rockets. Soviet Union is not the paragon of like... environmentalism.
I think North Korea doesn't, North Korea probably is quite good in terms of being green. They don't produce much waste because they don't have anything. There's no polystyrene boxes from their 50-inch plasma televisions because, well, they don't have those. So, they're very green and very unhappy. I've always said, we've made the point on previous shows and we've discussed climate, I don't really care about... The argument around climate change and whether we should have more factories or less factories. Or I rather say, well, this is how Earth is at the moment. This is what has led to the most prosperity we've ever seen amongst humanity. And we'd like to keep that prosperity, but we'd also like to not destroy the planet.
Yeah.
So let's find solutions where we can try and have both. And humans actually are very good at finding solutions to fix problems. That's what we've shown over a period of time.
Elon Musk wants to colonize other planets because he thinks we will outlive this one or outgrow this one. Jason Werbeloff, our friend,
wants to destroy Earth sooner,
more rapidly, so we are forced to colonize other planets and have new ways of governance and knowledge to be gained from doing so. But I don't see the Earth going anywhere. I think the UN is a crock of shit, if I'm really honest with you. And as Alex Epstein said on this podcast a few months ago, the value that being wealthy, that it gives to people is far greater than this existential risk of climate catastrophe. So reducing capitalism or reducing growth through capitalism is probably worse than the climate catastrophe that might or might not happen. The risks are much greater.
Well, the other point is really about the hysteria, and now the media is almost expert in hysteria. But climate change is one of them. We weren't calling it climate change 10 years ago. We were calling it global warming, and one of the reasons why we don't use that terminology anymore. If you go just with the scientific explanation, was they realized that some places will warm and some places will cool. Therefore, the global warming doesn't fully describe it. But when they were being hysterical in the early 2000s, global warming was what we all had to worry about. The Seychelles, I think, should have been underwater by now.
Or the Maldives.
And all those island countries. The biggest problem is you're never really going to convince people with hysteria, especially if you make predictions and they don't come true, because people have memories. And now we have the internet. So even if you don't have a memory, you can go look back. Arve Vechter wrote a great column, I think, last week or the week before, talking about all of these sort of predictions that have never come true, and the kind of damage that does to to any kind of messaging.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very similar to, just to segue into another topic, it's very similar to what they said about Trump when he got elected. The economy will crash and there'll be World War III. And
now the concentration camps for gay people.
Yeah, and now the new Brazilian president is coming in, Bolsonaro. Very interesting guy. I watched a propaganda video that someone put together. It's a fantastic propaganda video. And the guy, all he does is like shoot guns, tells everyone that black or white, we're all equal, no one deserves special attention or illegal privilege, and not to teach homosexuality in schools, something to that effect. So I watched the interview with him.
Is this part of the video, you're saying? So this is trying to make him look good?
No, the video, I don't know if they're trying to make him look good or not. he's on there calling someone faggot and like it's a bit crude. But he was in an interview with dozens of journalists and they kept asking questions. Like, what do you mean by minorities? Like, well, there are no minorities here. What's the difference between myself and a black Brazilian? Nothing. We're both humans under the Constitution of Brazil. No one deserves special protection. Why do black Brazilians deserve more protection than the poor whites in the northern part of Brazil, et cetera, et cetera?
Mm.
And those are all like sound points. I mean, he's, once again, his demeanor and his character is like bombastic and he's quite animated when he speaks. But it was, to my mind, like quite refreshing to hear someone just say, no, I mean, equality before the law is important and I'm not going to let anyone use affirmative action to have more rights than others. It just doesn't work that way. And that's a bit refreshing to hear.
Yeah, I think the freak out about him is he's been around for a long time. I think about 20 years or something like that.
And he was in a military general.
In the public sphere. And yeah, and he's made comments. So just to steel man the argument against this guy. He's made comments in the past about fascist dictators who he has admired.
The Brazilian ones, yeah.
Yeah. He's made comments about gay people and, you know, negative. Certainly, if you made a comment like that in South Africa, you'd be in front of the Human Rights Commission and stuff like that.
Links to pedophilia.
Certain words that he uses to describe gay people. He clearly doesn't like gay people. I mean, or he doesn't like homosexuality. So that is true. He's done all of those things. Someone got upset with me recently on Twitter because they said, you know, I a few weeks back before he had won the election, when he won to have the runoff, I had said, look, I think this is probably a good thing given where Brazil is currently in that. Brazil has suffered decades of very far left. When Latin America does ideology, they go all out. They don't mess around. So when they go left, they go hard left. Yeah.
Hard right.
And hard right.
Like you had Pinochet, Chavez.
Throwing people out of helicopters. Yeah. And, you know, they're not fucking around. And in a way, this kind of is what Brazil needs because they've gone so far left. And it's also what's inevitably going to happen. When you go so far left, eventually, given the opportunity, like democratic elections, people will swing. And they'll swing back because even the poor people will go, this whole thing has just made everyone poorer. Now we're all poor. But
I don't think it's even that simple. So let's just go back. So the workers' Socialist Party, I think. Lula's party.
Yes.
Vavi's great hero. He's in prison now, by the way, for corruption. just like Jacob Zuma is not. He came into power in 2003. Massive economic growth. Lots of state funding. Only to find out that all that was borrowed money, essentially. And that now the state is bankrupt. And to get those loans, he did a lot of dodgy, corrupt shit. Jeez, Jonathan, it sounds like another country, but I just can't.
Yeah, it actually almost sounds like a group of countries that have formed a coalition with like a stupid acronym called BRICS.
It sounds exactly like the same here. Praveen fucking borrowed 2.7 trillion rand and used it to pay civil servants' wages and give increases and to funnel it into like SAA and bullshit like that.
Yeah.
And now we're in recession. We junk status. And, Praveen's still there. Oh, yeah, but he'll clean it up. He'll clean it up. It sounds exactly the same. And only there was a poll earlier this year in Brazil. Only 8% of Brazilians said democracy is a good idea.
I think at the time, actually, Temer was the former president, or he was the current president, given Bolsonaro will be the new one. But he had a 6%. Approval rating, 6%, which, just to give you context, no one in the world has, amongst world leaders, amongst sort of G20 countries, has a lower rating, which seems to indicate that the Brazilian people just really dislike their politicians. Yeah, because, you know, Trump has a 47% rating, to give you some context.
And it keeps increasing.
Macron's around 30%, May's around 45%, Putin, if you can trust the things, is around 60%. The point really is, I find all of these populist polls hilarious because apparently Trump's a populist, but then when they poll him, he's not a populist, and Obama had 55%, so that's better, but also not populist. It's like, make up your minds, people. Look, I think that Bolsonaro is going to swing Brazil to the right, obviously. They're calling him far right. I think actions matter more than words. And I think saying that he's far right before the guy has done anything is probably a push. When he starts actively acting against minority groups, then I will agree with your statement that he's far right and authoritarian.
Absolutely.
But until he does that, if he turns around and goes, we're all equal, so you're not getting a leg up. Nobody's getting a leg up. You're all equal. If he does something like that, then I'm sorry. That's not far right.
Yeah, that's fine. Like, I don't care what people say half the time. I really don't. Actions speak.
Well, I mean, Cyril Ramaphosa was this past week was saying things like, it is enough with white monopoly capital. Now all entrepreneurs are heroes. Like, dude, your party funded a PR campaign that invented white monopoly capital. So, you know, let's see. I don't care that he's saying that entrepreneurs are heroes and he wants to pour investment. And he also said they'll never expropriate factories. Your words are meaningless, Cyril.
Yeah.
Meaningless. Let's see some actions, mate.
Yeah. Okay, well, back to Brazil. So both of us are in agreement that wait and see. So far, it's for us, it's a positive development.
Yeah,
that
there's definitely.
At least an economically right-wing president.
And I need to say, in some respects, you've got to be careful on this, but socially right-wing to some extent, because there are now emerging arguments to be made for some sort of social conservatism. So there was an interesting study released, I think, 2 weeks ago, looked at happiness of married couples. People who had been sexually liberal, slept with 6 to 8 partners or more, were less happy in their marriages than people who had not. So I'm kind of in the middle. I didn't get married a virgin, but I also didn't sleep with tens of people. And so kind of if you were on the one end, you were quite unhappy. And if you actually got married to your first sort of love, the study seems to suggest that you were more happy. I think these are very interesting. I'm not saying one study proves anything to a finality.
Or that you want the state to...
No, I don't want the state
marriage of.
But I think these are social things that are interesting to discuss,
yeah.
And certainly the left wing in the past has, in the past 50 years or so, has been very much about sort of the sexual revolution, for example, and that it all doesn't matter. And if you want to sleep with someone, go ahead, and that'll make you happy. And the evidence seems to show that that doesn't make you happy necessarily.
Well, I mean, I don't care if it does or not. I think the sexual revolution was great in some ways. It freed people from the strange ideas about chastity and tradition and things like that. And now they're finding out they're not too happy. Oh well, I mean, it's not about
what you do.
I just don't think the state should have any involvement in that sort of stuff. So Bolsonaro is against homosexuality being taught in schools, for example. I agree, only in the extent that nothing like that should be taught in schools.
Mm.
It's a parental duty, or there's organizations that can do that on the parents' behalf. I don't know why public schools should teach this sort of stuff to kids, whether it's heterosexuality or homosexuality or any sorts of sexuality.
Yeah.
There's places for that.
I think, though, that the point I'm making is more about sort of culture. So we've now seen that culture really transcends the state. It transcends the state, and then it kind of comes back and ends up manipulating what happens in the state in terms of who gets voted in terms of who's in power, what ideas are rejected and embraced. And so I think that I agree with you. The state should not be dictating to people what they do, but I do think there's a general sort of cultural norm that gets developed. Hollywood, for example, seems to be having a major problem. I actually need to look into the numbers, but anecdotally, I've noticed battling to find entertaining films, just good old entertaining films. And I'm wondering if, new ones that have been made. And I'm just wondering if that's not got to do with every time they make a movie now, if they have to consider the political correct nature of the film. Can the good guy be white and the bad guy be black? Or can he have a normal family, or does he have to, his wife be divorced from him and married to her female lover? It just seems that there's so much manipulation of that, and I think there's a lot of rejection of that amongst societies in general. The American society has rejected a lot of that.
Yep.
And I mean, think...
Well, the rise of Jordan Peterson explains most things, I would suspect. He has a relatively conservative... He doesn't say he's Catholic, but I think he is. If you ask him what God is, he gives you a long answer. That doesn't make sense. But I think he does.
God is your highest hierarchy.
Yeah, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got, millions of books sold. The best-selling book last year in the entire world. Sending out.
I think this year, actually.
Was it this
year? It's this year. Came out still 2018.
January. Yeah. And I mean, and between you and I think you've got very interesting ideas, but I don't find them brand new. He's retelling a lot of old things. He's using Jung, which is a very old form of
psychology. And a lot of people disagree with as well.
Yeah, and a lot of people disagree with it. But and now he's risen up to be like this rock star of the intellectual web, for lack of a better word. And yeah, people don't find meanings in things they thought they would.
Mm.
Maybe in like sexual partners and things like that. So I think, yeah, there's a cultural shift to the right. And
because of a long-term shift to the left. And I think this is where the centrists love to come in and go, yes, you see the far left doesn't work and the far right doesn't work. What you really need is to be in the middle. The
extreme center.
Yeah, the extreme
which
center.
Stands for nothing much.
Yeah, that place where you get hit by cars. Do we want to go to some questions? Because
offer. Something we won't talk about is Gigaba's penis.
No, I have no interest.
I just don't care. I don't know why this is interesting.
Not at all.
I don't think he was hacked. I think he sent it to your mistress or someone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she's like, I had enough of you. Let me go send it to someone else or to the press.
Yeah, send it to 10 people. Who knows?
Yeah, like it's.
Who knows?
And I mean, I'm sorry. If I had that video and
it seems like the kind of thing you'd send to Atul, you know, if you were trying to get like a contract or something.
I must admit, if I send a video like that to anyone, I would be mortified because it's so embarrassing. just that, to think that that's enticing to someone.
Well, I haven't watched the video because I don't want that image in my head, but I've heard it described and what he says.
That's what I'm saying. I've heard it described as well. But yeah, it's just stop it. But anyway, a good check on, I said this yesterday and I deleted it, a good check on political power is to have random phone leaks of each executive, of person in the executive, just randomly. So you don't know if it's you or not, but you know that it'll be leaked perhaps or won't be leaked perhaps every 3 months or so. So it'll be interesting to see.
So you're happy to trample on their privacy?
That phone was bought using my money.
Can I just bring up more hypocrisy, though? I do love the people in South Africa who are saying things like, and this is most of them, going, you know what, the sex life of Malusi Gigaba as a minister in the government is none of our business, really, because his sex life has nothing to do with him running the country or part of the country. Yet these are the same people who were so interested in Trump banging Stormy Daniels in 2006.
Well, are they like the same person, Jonathan?
Well, there are some people certainly that have shown interest in the one and not the other. I just want to show consistency. Is that when people find their when it fulfills their bias, then they are very interested.
And that happens out as well. I'm just concerned because he sent R$500,000 in cash to his girlfriend in the United States. And everyone's forgotten about that story.
Well, I'm more concerned that he worked with the Guptas to give them citizenship and then let them run the country.
Life, yeah. If you care about sex life, the big story is he gave his girlfriend R$500,000 cash.
Yeah.
Using diplomatic channels. Like, where do you get that money from as a civil servant?
And that's you shouldn't be using diplomatic channels to do that anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the only interesting part about his sex life.
Mm. Good. So can we move on? Because completely disinteresting. We've got some questions. And you wanted to chat to me about last week. So
I think we should do that first.
Okay, let's do it first.
So last week we had Kate Wilkinson of, where did she work?
Africa Check.
Let's
come closer to the mic.
She gave us some nice stationery. It's a bit cheap, made a cardboard, but it's fine. And
you're a dickhead.
That is. She's like, it's last.
Yes,
cardboard.
But it's that recycled stuff, and it's meant to make you feel like, you know, you're doing something for the planet. Yes?
Yeah.
Yes. George Soros approved.
I think that she put up very good arguments against your positions.
Okay.
And that I think you were a little bit unprepared for how well prepared she was, if that makes sense.
Okay.
She wasn't just a hack that you could just steamroll over. She rebutted your questions quite well. And I think that it could be a lesson for both of us.
Okay,
to be better prepared.
So what is my position?
Your position was that Africa Check didn't check Aram Otsoaledi on
No, that was one. On that was one point. In an hour and 20 minutes.
And she says, we don't check ideology, we check claims. And we have checked Motsoaledi on these four or five things. And you had no answer to that.
No, she and said that they checked Motsoaledi on one thing. As it happens, the truth is that they have not checked Motsoaledi on plenty of other claims. It was a point trying to show that when the narrative suits them, they check what they want to check. She still didn't answer that question. She dodged it. She dodged. Well, Aaron Motsoaledi has said many things over it's longer now, 2009, I think. So he's over 9 years of being the health minister, he said many, many things. And she brought up one instance of them having checked Motsoaledi. Great. So if she steamrolls me on one point, and frankly, the biggest conversation in that discussion was on land. So let's talk about what my position was there, which happens to be the position of many people. So I take the Ernst Roots position, I take the AfriForum position, I take many people we've had on the show, Franz Cronier's position most likely, I take their position on farm murders. And yeah, she chooses to take what she believes is a factual position, and I can't actually fully disagree that on base facts she's correct, and let me clarify that. So my position is there's a farm murder problem in this country, and we need to deal with that farm murder problem, and it is clearly a greater problem than other issues that exist in the country. For example, there's homicide generally, that's a big problem, and a bigger problem than that is a subgroup of farmers being murdered. All right? So I take that position. Mm-hmm. She looks at it and goes, well, I've taken all of the data, she claims. She's taken all of the data in her fact sheet, and she has summarized all of the data, and we just don't know. We just don't know if there's a problem.
No, we can't determine the rate of murder for farmers.
So we don't know if there's a farm murder problem. That was what she said. We don't know if there's a farm murder problem.
Unless there's better evidence that comes to mind. Yes.
Sure. And the problem is that she is taking fact without any context.
Ooh, but I thought facts don't care about your feelings, John.
It's not about feelings. It's about context.
What's the context?
The context is that in the Rwandan genocide, that we also didn't know there was a problem until 800,000 had been killed.
I don't see the connection.
No, Ramon, we don't always know the facts, the exact numbers. She won't settle on a definition. When you say to her, okay, all farms, no, I don't like that definition. Commercial farms, oh, we don't have those numbers. Okay, just the farms that AfriForum says, no, AfriForum includes other figures. So the problem is she will not settle on a definition. She moves goalposts, all right, which I said in the podcast.
I disagree with you. I think she just wants to know the actual number. So, and so far she hasn't come up.
So
with
as far
it.
As
I haven't been able to come up with.
So
it.
So here's the thing.
And all those that and on to steel man her, all those that claim they have come up with the number, she can't replicate the way they've done it. So
you will never be able to get down to an exact number.
Hold on, as a fact checker, I think she's doing the responsible thing and saying, I've tried all these things, nothing works. I don't know as yet.
Okay, so let me explain to you how statistics work. Okay.
No. We don't need a lecture.
No, you do need a bit of a lecture.
No, we don't need a lecture.
Every single statistic is not an exact number. We do not know that 6 million exact Jews died in the Holocaust. We know it was roughly 6 million. We do not say that it's a lie because it was 6,132,578 or it was 5,978,243. We don't do that. When we do medical testing, we know that a medical test, for example, for HIV will not be 100% accurate in terms of sensitivity and specificity in telling you that you have HIV. It doesn't mean we throw the test out, and it doesn't mean we don't use it. We have enough data. She says we don't have enough data to say that there's a problem. We have enough data because in stats we use things called confidence intervals where we say how confident we are of our information, and then we come to a conclusion that it's probably correct. All right? We do the same thing with medical experiments. We do this all the time with statistics. Statistics are never exact.
Right.
Or not never. Let me take that back, but almost never.
I don't know what you wanted to do, because I think this is a great challenge to AfriForum and mm-hmm. the Transvaal Agricultural Union and Russell Lamberti to actually come up with better things, with better ways to do it.
That's
and
fine.
But it's not AfriCheck's duty to say, oh, there's a range or something. No, there's a claim. They can't check the facts. They can't fact check it properly. Mm-hmm. So they say we can't fact check it properly until new evidence comes to light. I think there's nothing wrong with
that. That's fine. And AfriCheck can stand there and say, we don't know if there's a problem. And I'm going to stand and continue saying, I believe there's a problem and I think there's enough data. And she can carry on saying there's not enough data, therefore you cannot say there's a problem. And she can carry on doing
she
that and
there
I can be concerned.
She said personally
she thought there was a problem, but she exactly. said there's no evidence, basically. There's no fact. And
for the moment, there isn't. I don't know why you take this to mean like there's no problem whatsoever.
Because
like, yeah, here's a purple cow right here in front of you. You'd be like, no, there isn't. No, but of course there is. No, there isn't. Of course there is. It doesn't matter at the end of the day.
It does matter. It of course it matter. Matters.
Of course not. Not. It's one organization. Many others do it.
And that was my whole point about the general sense, is that it's one organization. She was turning around and going, well, it doesn't matter who our funders are because we're good people.
Now you're changing. Now you're changing the topic.
Hold on. That was part of the whole discussion. You said you wanted to discuss it.
No, well, we were talking about farm murders now. So,
okay, so what more do you want to discuss on farm murders?
For AfriForum and Russell Embetz. And Russell said so himself on Twitter, if you read his tweet. He said, this is great conversation, very important. My study will be out next year with with AfriForum, and then hopefully it'll be bulletproof. And, I mean, that's the perfect way to respond. But to assume that there's malice in saying that we can't know for sure, there isn't. I mean, I don't know why you assume that there's malice.
Why do I assume there's malice? By a left-wing organization.
Oh, there you go.
So you don't think they're a left-wing organization?
They probably are, but
I mean, is AfriForum a right-wing organization?
Oh, well, no, they're more classic liberal in some ways.
Do you agree that that would fall currently on someone was classifying spectrum?
I don't know what AfriCheck has to gain by saying it's impossible to tell. I think they generally think it's impossible to tell.
What do they have to gain? Well, this is what I said about fact-checking organizations after the show.
Just because they're left-wing doesn't make them wrong all the time.
The bottom line is, what do they have to gain? I think that fact-checking organizations are going to be used as a very useful tool to undermine news sources that you don't agree with and to buy time to build narrative.
Okay, so like they've been doing for 100 years.
What do you mean?
Building narratives, undermining truth. And
yeah, but in the age of the internet, in the age of 24/7 news, in the age of all of that, fact-checking organizations are going to be used, and depends on by who, but they're going to be used to dispense with ideas and narratives you don't like, give time to build other narratives. Simple as that. And I think that AfriCheck, whether they individually believe they're part of that, whether they are part of that.
All I want to know, Jonathan, can you prove that?
Can I prove what?
What you just said.
Can I prove
that? They'll be used to push a narrative. Can you prove it?
Yes.
Oh.
They're funders. Their funders aren't funding them to be neutral bodies in the world and do nothing. People don't give money to things just out of free will, for nothing to happen, nothing to come of it.
So philanthropy doesn't exist.
Philanthropy might exist, but of course philanthropy exists. But the point is if you give food to children who are starving, then your wish is for those children to not be starving anymore. Yep. If you give money to AfriCheck, I don't know. We don't know really what the will is. But if we look
exactly.
at the... If we look at the history of people who are funding them, who have been funding organizations for decades, and those organizations all fall on one side of a political spectrum, and those people have made statements themselves, which all support certain causes, then it seems quite obvious what they'd want the outcome to be,
but
Ramon.
Soros funds a lot of liberal...
Not just talking about Soros, but anyway.
Central organizations around Europe. A lot of liberal think tanks are funded by Soros.
Of course he does.
I mean, you can't say... I don't know. I think basically her claim was, we don't know yet until there's better evidence. I think it's a solid claim, and for you to have this conspiracy
What do you
about
do
funding,
with that claim? What do you do
well,
with
nothing.
That claim?
I take it... Now I go to AfriForum and say, listen, they say this, you said this.
Cool.
Is there a way to reconcile these two positions?
So, I mean,
if
government
not,
shouldn't
who
react,
needs to
surely,
be
in the meantime.
Who needs
because
to be
because what we've got...
Government will never fucking react,
okay, but let's say they wanted to. Let's say they wanted to.
But they
and
won't.
Now we've got two opposing organizations saying opposite things. One says there's a major problem here, the stats. Other says there isn't really a problem because we can't prove it. And there are no stats, right?
Okay.
So we've got two competing organizations saying opposite things,
yeah.
Right? And government wants to act, but seems reasonable that government wouldn't act until they have exact data.
Then it's up to the people, the activists, to fight for their positions and make them the most dominant position in the
cool.
country.
Cool. Then consider me an activist fighting for that position.
There we go. But he's do it on like...
Well, I said I always say I'm biased. So what do you want?
No, but you're biased against... Well, Kate.
I'm biased against facts without context. You're correct.
You're biased against Kate in this regard on a conspiracy that you can't really prove. I understand what you're saying, but without proof, it remains a conspiracy.
I disagree, and I think we can leave it there.
Oh, why? Because I got you with the zinger.
No.
Now you can't answer.
No, because you're saying I'm a conspiracy theorist, and I'm not going to go down the conspiracy theorist rabbit hole.
I say you have a conspiracy, and you can't prove that conspiracy. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, sure. George Soros loves right-wing causes as much as he loves left-wing causes. He has no point in funding it. Pierre Omidyar, same story. Loves Hamas, loves AfriCheck, loves AfriForum just as much. Sure, he wants the same things to happen from all of them.
Have you ever watched the movie called Lord of War?
Hmm? Yeah, right. Many times.
It's a fantastic movie. Everyone should watch it. Hmm. Nick Cage's character goes to a big arms dealer. And he says, you know, I don't understand. You funded Iraq and Iran while they were fighting. And he says, have you ever thought about me wanting both of them to lose?
Ramon, that's also, now you're going into conspiracy. Maybe he wants both of them to lose.
Yeah, but at least I acknowledge it's a conspiracy.
But the thing
we
is...
We don't know what people think when they fund something, Jonathan. You can't go into someone's mind and pick out their intention.
You're correct.
So without any evidence, your conspiracy is bullshit. So I think you should take it on the facts that Africa Check are trying to fact check a farm murder ratio. They can't find it based on the available evidence at hand. And I'm not saying we should trust them forevermore. I'm just saying it makes logical sense that their argument is sound. Now it's up to other people who want to push farm murders into the national dialogue to find better sources and better evidence to counteract Africa Check. I mean, that's the point of an open and free society. But you don't...
I'm not trying to stop Africa Check doing their job.
No, but you don't blame Africa Check for doing their job.
No, I just understand Africa Check's bias, and you don't. You refuse to accept that they might have a bias.
You can't know that by meeting one of their head researchers.
I actually think she's probably the least biased person I've ever met from Africa Check.
Have you met all of them?
Nope.
There we go.
Yeah.
Point proven.
What's the point proven?
At least, you know, when we say the ANC is funding the NDR or trying to implement it, there's like decades of precedent and research and evidence for that. You can't say...
But you don't know all the ANC members? Same point will apply, right?
No, I know, but if you look at their official policy positions, which is officially the party's position, the NDR is right full there, right and center. Which is far more evidence than you have for Soros funding some conspiracy to debunk farm murders.
It's not. No, Ramon, that is a straw man right there. I never said Soros is funding a conspiracy to debunk farm murders.
Don't call me a straw man.
That's not what I said. And that's why I wanted to move from the point, because I've made what I think is my case very clear. Those people who agree with me will agree, and those who don't. I don't care. Like, this is the whole point. Last week, you wanted to come across as the neutral guy on the show. Like, it's funny because you started off saying I was the Dave Rubin and you ended up being the Dave Rubin.
Well, because you made points.
Which is fine. Like, I don't care. I don't know.
Okay,
Ramon, that's fine. You think the points lack credibility. There are other people who agree with you, and there's other people who don't. All right?
There was a long discussion. Say there's climate change.
There was a long discussion. There's a long discussion on our Facebook group in which people agreed with you and where you stand on this, and there were people who agreed with me and where I stand on this. And let's leave it at that. People can make up their own minds.
Don't you like fighting?
Hey?
Don't you like fighting?
Yes, but we've done it for about 20 minutes on the show now, and I want to get to the questions.
Consider yourself sufficiently rebuked.
Okay.
Excellent. So, don't make the rest of the interview awkward. I mean, the podcast awkward, please. Ronaldo actually wants to know who's the most interesting Ronaldo. Yeah,
The Ronaldo,
the radical centrist.
Oh, okay, yes, loves the guy who's the guy who
wants to lock up racists.
Yes,
I don't know how centrist either of those positions are.
Absolutely.
What is the most interesting guest we've had?
Well, you've got an easy answer here, and I think I agree with you for the most part.
Well, I think it's a combination. I think in terms of learning about South Africa, Frans Grenier, Anschwitz, Ian Cameron and Moletsi Mbeki they managed to make my mind up about what the great political currents are. So, but France, probably the first one, France Grenier, by far. Like you know when you have light bulb moments? Imagine having one every 5 minutes in an hour. Like, everything just changes. That's how I feel when France is in the studio.
Yeah, I think I would have given France as my answer as well. Moletsi Mbeki was good. I just found him, he's quite rehearsed. Like, he knows what his points are. He knows what his points are. You know, he's repeated it many times, and he's not giving us anything new on the show. Whereas someone like France, you do feel like you're getting something new from him, you might not have heard that before. So, and we've had him on several times, but every time he has been great. So I'd probably settle on France as well. Look, they've been some unexpected guys as well. And I'm going to forget his name, but is he a pastor? The minister?
Which one? Chris Townsend?
No, the Christian guy. We had lots of Christians on the show, but
Ian.
We got into a short. Ian. You see, you're always going to forget his name.
And he's my friend.
And we even got in. I want to have Ian Benson. I want to have him back on the show because we got into an interesting discussion on abortion actually towards the end of that podcast, which was he presented an argument I'd never heard before.
Right.
which I found, which was really mind-bending, you know, when you kind of know how you're going to argue abortion and then someone comes with something completely left of field.
Yeah.
And you're just like, wow, okay, I never thought about it like that. So,
but I mean, let's be honest, every guest, irrespective of how good or bad the podcast, every guest has like some sort of perspective that we didn't think of. Like,
yeah, sure.
I find myself going home after each recording, I'm like, geez, I never thought about it that way. For like 90% of
the people. Yeah, there's a couple of guests that haven't done much.
Yeah.
But I mean, Sikler, for example. Sikler was great. I mean, we want to have him back on. Sikler, for frick's sake, come on the show. But we want to have Sikler back on the show. And, you know, he was, I think, our fourth episode or something like that,
yep,
more than 2 years ago. And great show, great episodes, great, like...
Told you what socialism is.
Yeah, great thinker. You know, if you ever want to rebuke someone on the states in the Nordic states are socialist, just listen to that episode. So yeah. I do think, I mean, look... With regards to last week, Kate, you know, I don't take nothing she said, and I get her point around the facts. It's not that I take nothing of what she said, and I don't think that she had valid arguments. And it's not. And I went home and I did think about that podcast a lot. The reason I asked, for example, on the Facebook group for comment is because I did want to hear what people thought and how they took it. And I appreciate the criticism, the constructive criticism. So, you know, I think every guest is provoking.
Yeah, except for Ronaldo. Fuck that guy. But Ronaldo asked another question. Who has refused to be on the show? Oh, where did we start?
Yeah, Ronaldo, this is a long list.
We've had 200 shows, I think, roughly.
No, it's more. About 140 or somewhere around there.
I think the list of who doesn't come on the show is longer than that. Everyone from the EFF, absolutely everyone.
Yeah.
I know we've invited about five.
Many Daily Maverick columnists.
Yep. Many people in the DA.
Yeah. Herman Mashaba, we even got to pretty much directly, not with him, but an email went to him and then it was sent off to his PAs and his people. We had direct communication with them for a couple of weeks and then they just bailed, essentially. So Herman won't come on the show, it would seem.
Difficult to get anyone in the ANC, like someone who's of
yeah,
caliber,
we've invited. We haven't in the past year or so, but before that, we try to invite ANC MECs, ANC mayors.
We asked once.
Box Tao was invited.
That's true.
I think that was when he was still mayor.
Yeah.
So we've tried. We've tried to have all these people on the show. A lot of journalists as well.
A shitload of journalists.
I mean, Nick Bauer, for example, has been very critical of the show.
Eusebius
McKaiser blocked us.
Comedians.
Has blocked any channels.
Conrad Koch doesn't want to come on.
Yeah.
So, and to be fair, I don't know if I would really care if they changed their minds and to come on. Because what I've found, and with all due respect to politicians who've been on the show before, it's very difficult to have an interesting conversation with a politician on a podcast.
Yeah.
Because I think that the medium is just very different from what they're used to, and they sort of refuse to open up.
Yeah, they don't relax.
We've had, I think Kachalia was very good. Khaleb Kachalia, yeah, Ronaldo was very good when he's right, which is not.
But I think Khaleb Kachalia being as open as he was is you can almost draw a direct line between Khaleb wearing his colours on his sleeve,
right,
and him not winning, for example, the provincial position, the next election, he's it's Solly who ended up being in that position, which I don't really understand. You leave Solly in Pretoria, you leave Herman in Joburg, and then you let Khaleb try for the provincial post. What's the big deal? From every discussions we've had with other people, Khaleb seems to be incredibly competent and knowledgeable and liberal.
But he's a fighter.
But he's a fighter, and he says it like he is, and he's not there to care about your feelings when he says certain things. And I think the DA has become an incredibly politically correct party. And so...
Quite.
Yeah. So, yeah, politicians, I agree with you. Having politicians on the show, we always go, oh, you know, we got Helen on the show, or we've got Gwen on the show, or, you know, we've got a big politician on the show, and then we have them, and we walk out, and we're like, oh, it's a bit disappointing, because they'll tell you so much, but they just won't go that extra sort of bit.
Yeah. It's a very practiced form of interview.
Yeah.
Whereas this is not at all.
And they look, they're protecting their livelihoods at the same time. They know that There's certain things they can say and there's certain things they can't say, because I suppose in politics, in 5 years' time, someone can dig something up and go, but you said X. So I get that, but it doesn't make for as interesting podcasts when you really get people going, this is what I truly as a person believe,
true,
regardless of my affiliations.
Yeah, yeah. So just last question from him. Who's the most toxic person in South Africa? Well, I think it's obvious. It's Julius Malema. I think he does so on purpose. I think it's good politicking on his side to be as toxic as possible, create a binary.
The only sort of challenger, and it's a bit kind of, you wouldn't consider it, but I might consider someone like Rob Davies to be as toxic. Now, he's not in, you never hear about Rob Davies, and you only see him wearing badly tailored suits.
Tailored. That's off the rack at Ackermans. Okay. Nothing wrong with Ackermans, by the way, but Jesus, those shoes.
But you must understand that Rob Davies, if you go and read the ANC's policies and the sort of inter-party literature, Rob Davies is authoring a lot of that stuff. And you are going to battle to find any major differences between that stuff and the stuff coming out of the Soviet Union in the 1970s. And so Julius Malema, certainly for the culture, for the general discussion that we have as a nation, is the most toxic. But the ANC is in power, and Rob Davies is literally writing their next move.
Right. And all the worst time. Form of communist. It's him, Ibrahim Patel, and Pravin Gordhan. They're the worst sort of communists because they're not corrupt.
Yes, they're competent communists.
And it is the hell out of me that these people go home on a Friday night and drink water and eat white bread and just pore over policy documents and fiddle around with words on a page, and that's what gets them off, like Kigaba in Kigaba's video. And that's the worst form, because they seem competent, and they are competent, but they are competent in terrible ways. So they never grab the limelight, except when they're under attack.
Well, you can see Pravin now. He's been delegated to the SOEs, and he's appointed competent boards. And so all that's going to happen is, state-owned enterprises are a bad idea, especially the ones where there's enforced monopolies like Eskom. And so all that's going to happen is they will get it functioning and running, but it'll be only as good as a state-owned enterprise and a monopoly ever can be.
No. We need to go to a third level here. The SOEs need to be competent, and civil service needs to be competent, so that the NDR can carry on. That's the important part. That's why SAA still exists for some reason. It makes no sense in any other way other than ideologically.
Well, and egotistically. I think there's ego. I think there's a lot of ego.
Ideologically, like, who said it? Gareth and Anselin. If you sell SAA, it's like selling part of your wall of your house. Yeah. Like, what's the point?
You take away a wall and you've only got three walls left.
It's the ideology of the party. It's the only reason why it makes sense in that way. That if you have competent SOEs, a competent civil service, you can be on the road to socialism in a lot more effective manner.
Have more control.
Yeah.
All right, good. Next.
Are there any parties that most closely fit your ideals?
No, I, what worries me is that sorry, I'm answering the question. You can come in just now. What worries me is how much parties are moving away from my positions, or perhaps I'm moving away from them. You can argue that too. But
you've always been a crusty Zionist.
I feel like the DA has moved left away from our policies. The problem with COPE, which I know a lot of people are starting to like, is, if you listen to the Patreon questions that we did with Mosiro Lekota, and basically I just shot the questions off at him. I didn't argue with him at all. And he's a statist. He believes in the capable state. And so while I like Mosiro Lekota's positions on non-racialism, and I like his positions on certain liberal aspects, for example, property rights, he still believes that the state ultimately is going to solve problems, and most worriedly, social problems. So that's an issue for me, because it's the same problem with the DA. The DA moving towards sort of left-wing socialism, what they now call the social democrats, because that's now the popular way to call yourself a socialist.
And as you speak to them, they say, no, we haven't changed at all. We just have debates.
Yes, we have debate within the party, and it's good to have different voices, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. the problem is it's unconvincing, and no, so I'm not convinced by any of the parties that are currently available to me. Ramon?
I know zero, but it has been for like 30 years.
Yes, you're a non-voter. You're an NVC, a non-voting character.
Yeah, I'm literally for the first time part of the majority, because I think the majority of people don't vote in this country. Okay, of the whole population, not of the voting.
I think 60% votes roughly in elections,
depending on the election.
Yeah,
but some are. Yeah, we still vote quite a lot. In most countries, it's under 50% that vote. Mm. Here, we're still like over 55%.
Except Australia, where you have to vote by law.
What a great democracy! You have freedom to choose as long as we force you to choose someone.
Well, you can spoil your vote, so I suppose there's that.
Just draw a giant penis on it.
Basically.
Is Cyril playing 4D chess? Dude, Cyril's not even playing 1D chess. I just don't see it.
I was at work the other day, and there were some people in theatre with me who were doctors as well, very, very clever guys. And they all think he's playing 4D chess. So their 4D chess is that what he's doing is he's appeasing all the sort of factions. And he's got a real threat from Zuma and his faction, essentially, because KZN is such a huge grouping within the ANC now and Northwest. And that what he's going to do is after 2019, then he's going to consolidate power. And I was like, that's never going to happen. Like, if he wants it, the only way he gets to consolidate power and somehow swing whichever way he wants to swing is if he literally fires every military general and SAP general that doesn't see his point of view and goes almost benevolent dictator.
Or just imprison half the NEC.
Yeah. Well, you got to first get the protection around you.
Yeah.
And then you offer them jail or a bullet. That's the only way Cyril swings any way he wants to, inverted commas, swing. Obviously, a leftward swing is a lot easier because that's where the ANC is going. I think it's far more believable that he's following the ANC's footsteps, which they have been going along for the past 20 years and which they wrote about for the past 60 years, than that he's somehow going to become Milton Friedman after 2019. And he, you know, you just need to – he appoints Tito Mboweni. You need to see who Tito Mboweni refers to. Even when Tito Mboweni says you need to read broadly, he doesn't talk about Hayek and Friedman. He talks about reading
Karl Marx,
and he talks about, Rousseau, and he talks about, you know, he talks about those sort of people, which we know leads to a certain ideology. And yeah, 40, no way, as Ramon says, not even 1D.
I just don't see 1D at all. No, I think even if he does consolidate power, it's for the wrong reasons. I mean, he still hasn't made any decisions for the MPA, head of the MPA, after 3 months or whatever it is the court gave him. So, I mean, I spoke to a friend in the US. He lived here until about 2 years ago. And he says, listen, here's the problem. We have to give... and I'm going to butcher his words, but we have to give him the benefit of the doubt, because with arguably this is the only election where you don't want the ANC to lose support. Because if Cyril is what we think he is, the so-called great reformer, he'll need as much support as possible to carry out that mandate for reform. And he can only do that with like 60% or whatever the case might be. And I was like, the risk is just far too high that we give him too much support for socialism.
Yeah.
I know that this sounds like dog whistling and all that, but it's the ANC policy of the past like 60 years. Like, if you want to fight me on that, please do, because I don't see any other way.
Let's see them do something that signals some real change. Let's see them do something. If they give up SAA as an example, then that won't be enough for me. That would be at least a show. I think that would be a big show. Given, you know, Gareth Van Onselen's description, I think that would be a big show of there's actual will for change here. Would it be the be-all and end-all? Obviously not. Yeah, but
even if they fire 30,000 workers from Eskom, it still won't be enough. The problem is not the workers. The problem is Eskom. The problem is not the amount of trains that are too big for the railway track. It's that PRASA exists as a state function. This should be municipal functions at best or provincial at worst.
Yeah.
The fact that it's still a national function to run trains, for God's sake, is mind-blowing. So... that small stuff, I see the selling or closing down of SA as a small concession to buy time. That's all I see it. Firing 30,000 workers, I don't think they'll do it with the unions. But if they do, it's a concession to buy time to fully implement the NDR later on. I don't, unless I see a radical reform in terms of destroying labor laws,
yeah,
or reforming that, that then that would be an indication for me that, okay, something's happening. Mm. Just tinkering with SOEs is just not going to do it for me at all. So no 40 chairs, not even 1D chairs. Brazil, we spoke about him. Yes, the new Firearms Control Act amendment bill.
Self-defense is not a reason to own a firearm. I don't know what you do. You just stir your pasta with your firearm.
You just say,
that's what it's
back
for.
The land, and then I'll leave you alone. That's the key. That's the safe word.
Is that the safe phrase?
Safe words. No, from our sources are saying that Minister Tsele is furious.
Yes.
About this, that
he's furious about what?
8 months before an election, the key intention of the ANC is coming to light in a leaked parliamentary.
Oh, document. So he's crossed that it came out.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, but he does want it to happen because he said before that
his
vibe.
But this is very embarrassing for them because they say, no, it's about safety. Gun control is about safety. We don't want people shooting each other. That's our job. And then this leaks out. And then I must admit, gun owners in South Africa, if you're a gun owner or not a gun owner, but you care about guns, Gun Owners SA, of which Gideon, our previous guest, is the vice chairman,
yes,
they took that and they were in most newspapers and radio stations that week. And they did a fantastic job of saying, of just shitting all over this paper.
It's interesting because it's another, in my opinion, miscalculation by the government. I don't think they realize how cross-cultural, multiracial the issue of gun ownership is.
Yeah, go to any gun show. There's
even more than land. So, the government assumes land, most of the white people, which is not really true. But at least there is some split in terms of race there. In terms of guns, everyone believes in South Africa is quite big on self-protection, yeah, and it doesn't split according to, farmers like guns and black urban people don't. Bullshit. Across all race groups, gun ownership is a popular idea.
Yeah, go to any gun show, like a proper gun show with ranges where you can test guns and all that. It's very, very multicultural, if
yes,
you love that term.
Yeah.
That's the most, a lot of diverse people there. The best shooter in the country is like a black woman for rifle, and for pistols, a black guy called Gugu, I think. I met him once. I think this will really hurt them if they want to push ahead with this because their own constituency likes guns quite a lot.
Yeah.
And they're just fucking with them. Obviously, they want to remove guns. They want to take your shit. You can't shoot them.
Yes.
That's obvious.
And you can't form some sort of army against them.
Due to the NDR.
Yeah.
Like, once again, all this evidence for the NDR, and then Cyril says, but entrepreneurs are great.
Yes. 4D chess.
Yeah. I'd rather.
Look at what's in front of you, people.
I'd rather listen to
look
the
at
evidence.
What's in front of you. Right. What's next?
So, a general question about culture. Okay. It's a very. Simon, I'm sorry. It's a very long question.
Damn you, Simon.
And for good books about what I'm. About culture generally, there's a brand new one came out on Thursday that I'm busy
reading. The one on nationalism.
National Populism, The Revolt Against Liberal Democracy by two British political scientists, and it is really great. Key thing, this was years and years in the making. There's not one reason for it happening, but there's a general culture of a lack of connection between elected officials and citizens that appoint them, especially in Europe. And in the United States, Europe was in way ahead. UKIP came out in 2004 after 5 years of consecutive growth in the UK. So this is not about economics. It's not about things like that. It's about a sort of vested interest in identity and nationalism that has been missing for the past 30, 40, 60, 50 years. So that's a fantastic book. So just look for Matthew Goodwin on the internet and you'll find it. It just came out last Thursday. I'm halfway through. It's phenomenal. Any books you're reading other than like textbooks? Playboy?
I'm just on cultural. I think one of the most important ones of recent times is Douglas Murray's Strange Death of Europe.
I know, last year. Yeah,
very good book. That gives you a good sense on immigration and why it matters. And, you know, it sort of cuts through the hysterical immigrants are taking our jobs, but also is honest about the problems when you mix people into cultures who refuse to assimilate, essentially.
Well, and a good point about that book is what sort of Europeans have lost a sense of being Europeans.
Mm.
They just don't care about their own cultures anymore. Mm. They've been weakened. So that's why they would allow so many people to come in and the inherent problems that come with that.
I think it's also interesting. Your book speaks to that. The Douglas Murray's book speaks to that with regards to, the recent comments Trump made about being a nationalist. You got to listen to those comments in context because out of context, of course, he's a Nazi. But he was basically pitting globalism against nationalism and saying globalism looks at the world and doesn't really care where any specific country comes out. And that's what you see in the EU as an example. The EU came along and said, we're all going to use euros now, and we don't really care what ends up happening to your home economy. And a lot of places, Italy, for one example, really suffered as a result of that. Nationalism now, probably more meant as a patriotism, but nationalism as in caring about your country, caring about what your country represents, etc.
Right, but more about caring about you having a choice in the direction your country's going.
Well, that's the populism argument, if I'm not mistaken, that book that you're reading tries to make.
Well, it's just saying populists want more democracy.
Yes.
And more referendums, more choices.
Well, if the average man, which is populism, is deciding what's happening at a government level, then that is...
to me, it just sounds like democracy. I don't know why we call it populism.
We've discussed it before. Populism's a sort of now catch-all word for anything we don't like. We need to be careful. I mean, America's not a democracy as an example. America's a republic. And I think their model is probably a better model because there is a danger to the common man on the street deciding everything down to the last dotted I and crossed T. Which is why America has the republic set up like they do and why the founding fathers did it that way.
Yeah. So I just want to answer two or three more.
Sure.
We have to go.
Yes.
Any chance of a national populist movement in South Africa popping up?
I'm just signaling our guest. Is the EFF, could you argue it's a populist movement?
Yeah, is it a national one? Sure.
I think the ANC is a populist movement, if I'm honest.
In some ways, even though they are like the elites that have...
sure. But the person who votes for them, I think that's very much based on, inverted commas, populism. That's why the word, for me, it has so little meaning in because it doesn't provide you any context.
Well, I mean... the definition is ordinary people against the elites.
Yes.
That's the ordinary definition of the word. So I think I just find that the elites are the populists, if that makes sense, in this country.
Yeah, well.
If it's right-wing populism, I don't know. I think Ephraim dabbles into that a little bit. Politically, I don't know how much support there will be because I don't think, which links to the other question, will South Africa ever be a competitive economy in the global world? That will never happen while we have a democracy, in my opinion.
That we'll be competitive.
Yeah, or have like a right-wing populist party because because we must remember 70% of voters voted for socialism between the ANC and the EFF, generally speaking.
I've been thinking about this.
Well, hold on. And I think you will need either like a massive campaign with billions of dollars to convince people that capitalism is cool and that the rest of these ideas are cool, or you'll need a sort of in the mold of Deng or Kigame or other Kagame and other people in South Korea that had one as well, where you have a former Marxist or former left-leaning person gets power and then just uses it to take the country by the scruff of his neck and say, listen, we're going economic growth. If you stand in my way, I'm going to jail you.
Yeah.
I think you'll need that in this country. I don't know if you can win it just through ideas in a democratic fashion.
So I think, given what's happening in Brazil, and I was thinking about it in a South African context, and this is not 10 years, maybe not even 20 years, but there's a point of complete decay and misery that you get to in every country where if there's an authoritarian government, you know, that is oppressing you through means of violence, then there's usually a violent uprising. If that doesn't happen and there's some sort of still mock democracy, you end up getting the Bolsonaro effect, the Trump effect. And I don't think it's out of the question for South Africa, but I think it's decades away.
Yeah, we haven't suffered enough.
Yeah, basically.
It's only, inverted commas, 24 years. Or if you think about it, it's actually like close to 80, because nationalists and the ANC don't differ too much. They just change the axioms on the race question. But it's been 80 years. I don't know if is there a will from ordinary people for this to be like a world-renowned economy? I don't think so.
I mean, just because of I engage with people and they're so... I mean, most people don't even know what the NDR is, dude. You know, they've got no sense of what the ANC is doing. Cyril says nice things on camera and they all buy it. AfriForum are a far right wing group, like News 24 says they are, and the Renegade Reporter are just a bunch of alt rightists. And you know, a lot of people do live in that bubble. And until everyone, that's why I say decades, until everyone is brought down to the worst possible level, really, until you get close to that absolute socialism, that sort of communist ideal. And then people go, even the poor people turn around and go, hold on a second, I never wanted the rich people to be as poor as me. I wanted to be as rich as the rich people.
Yeah.
And then everyone kind of looks at each other and goes, this has not worked. Like, what we've been sold hasn't worked. It hasn't worked if we're poor. It hasn't worked if we were rich and now we're poor. It's failed for everyone. And when everyone kind of realizes that, and then they're willing to vote for a real risk. They're willing to take a chance on someone who might say dodgy things and who may even end up doing dodgy things. But what's worse than our collapsed economy and our poverty and our misery?
Yeah. Well, don't forget, populists, the voters of populist movements are often more affluent than the ordinary individual. Just the last question. How do we get this place educated? South Africa. Everything's failing.
The private sector.
It will never work until you give parents the choice to decide where to send their children to school. And you completely let the state fund something but not manage it. That is the only way I see it happening.
Yeah, I agree with that fully. And the only thing I'd add to that is when kids finish school, you cannot give anyone a leg up. So, because at the moment we have, to take someone who wants to do medicine. A kid who is white knows to get into UCT, they need at least 90-something% to enter medicine. And a kid who happens to have a black skin knows that he doesn't need to get more than 70 or something to that effect. So the problem is that you're incentivizing one to work less and the other to work harder. And you're going to keep creating these abnormal social engineering splits amongst your population. And that's just going to perpetuate the problem forever.
Indeed. Cannot disagree with you there. So, yeah, sorry, we run out of time. No more questions for this week, but thank you for posting them. As always, join us on Twitter, Facebook, just look for Renegade Report. But join our Renegade Report group. That's where the most activity takes place, where people call Jonathan. People say, I wanted to sleep with Kate because I was nice to her, which I found really rude.
Ramon sliding into the DMs, apparently.
Yeah, apparently, because I just treated her like a human being.
Yeah.
Who knew that was rave culture these days, treating people well.
Absolutely. You were catcalling her basically the whole show.
All the time.
That's what was going on. Thank you so much for listening and for watching. If you watched, one camera angle for the moment. Big argument, but one camera angle for the moment. And as always, we'll catch you next time. Cheers.
This is CliffCentral.com.